Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mindless Full, the episode of Triumph Over Trauma. I am absolutely delighted. I have a beautiful guest on today's episode, the amazing Shirley Keegan from Shirley Keegan Wellness. Shirley and I connected on Instagram just a while ago, and just before Christmas, wasn't it? I think.
Yes, I think maybe November.
Yeah. We attended a manifestation workshop online and we were connecting, and Shirley was saying she'd love to do a podcast episode. And I was like, that's it, you're coming on. And I suppose now is the right time. She has an absolute wealth of wisdom. And this is a space for her to share her journey. And like always, I suppose the intention of bringing someone on is to give you an insight, some hope, some inspiration that life can be hard, but it's often within the hard times, or you know, when things cross our paths, the troubles, that I suppose we can be redirected on another path. And I think for Shirley that has definitely happened for her. She's been redirected and she's going to share now her journey. So thank you so much, Shirley, for coming on. I suppose starting off, you do a wealth of stuff, and I was actually on your website just before you came on. You do reflexology, bioenergy, and recently life coaching. So
yes,
yeah, like amazing. But how did it all start for you? Because I'm sure you didn't just wake up one night and say, I'm going to do reflexology. I'm sure a bit of a journey, I can imagine.
Yeah, definitely a bit of a journey. So I spent 25 years in total in the corporate world. So my life would have been very, very different pre this. And I had this sense of being unsettled or not being fulfilled, and that was back in 2011. And I actually did my diploma in life and executive coaching back then.
Oh,
while I was still in the corporate world.
Okay.
And that was the start of my search, I suppose. I knew there was something not right, but I didn't know kind of what. I was trapped by that usual conditions of society. The wages were good. The job was just in the road. I was very highly respected. I could do it in my sleep. But I used to have this sense when I'd arrive in there, you know, I had a beautiful, my office overlooked the River Blackwater, and I used to find myself looking out the window and I'd be saying, you know, oh my God, is this it? Like, am I going to arrive at the cemetery with a bouquet of flowers that are going to say she paid her bills on time? Like, I had that kind of sense of just deep unfulfillment. Anyway, thankfully, the universe intervened. I think it really realized I was going to be very slow to get the message. So it completely took me out. So I went from like leaving work on a Friday, now feeling stressed. It was busy. There was a lot going on. And I keep saying next week will be easier. Next week will be easier. And basically that Sunday, I found myself just crying and saying to my partner at the time, I can't face work. I can't go in. I thought I was just tired. You know, the doctor certified me for a week. It went into 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, I experienced a panic attack. I'd never had a panic attack in my life. And then I literally spent the next 6 months experiencing, I would say, a breakdown. My doctor would say burnout, because I wasn't medicated or hospitalized. But the bottom line was I experienced depression, I experienced anxiety, and I experienced panic attack. And it was like, it felt so condensed and so intense. So that was really, I suppose, the start of my mind being open up to this. Now, I was always a fan of it. Like, I used to go to spas, I'd have my reflexology, I loved my massages. So I used to go for that even while I was working. And when I look back now and I think, like, I used to meet one particular therapist that I had, and I used to say to her, oh my God, I'm so stressed. Like, I'd say I was like a wound coil.
Okay.
You know, whereas I thought I was one of these high powered people that just needed that hour and I'd be fine again for another while. So that was the start of it, being in that really vulnerable position. but learning that I did not know how to be vulnerable. I felt ashamed. I didn't want, and it wasn't even that I thought at that stage, I wasn't even thinking about what anyone else thought. I literally was just getting through the days. So my daughter wasn't long after having her first little girl. She was only about maybe a year old, I think. And like, nothing brought me joy, Kira. And like, I adore my daughter and I adored her granddaughter. Like, my family is my life. But I just didn't care if I saw anybody. I was completely blunted to everything. I just wake up like after about 14 hours sleep, and I'd move from the bedroom to the sitting room. I got dressed every day, but then I'd just sit in the chair. I wouldn't even put the TV on. I mightn't even put the heating on. I couldn't even watch something on TV that had even a sad thing to it. It was like I couldn't absorb 1 ounce more than what I had to try and carry. And I'd a lot of the books here, so I would have read, you know, kind of self-development books previous to this. And then I bought more books. So I was reading all the books. And what I felt like was I understood what was wrong, but I didn't know how to make it better. And there's one kind of funny thing in the process of this at the early stages. My doctor asked me, would I go to see a psychotherapist? And I said, I will do anything. Just send me somewhere where I can be fixed. And I'll never forget that first day I went into this guy. So I arrived in anyway, and he said, you know, tell me a bit about yourself. And I described my role. This was the first thing I did. I said, you know, I'm an account manager for a medical device company. We make blood glucose meters for diabetics. And he said, oh, is it a family run business? And I said, no. And he said, oh, and you said, you know, that it was we. And that was my first lesson, realizing I had completely become defined by my job. And then the second thing was that even when I arrived to him, I hardly wanted to talk through the stuff. He was asking me questions and I just said, look, I know what's wrong with me. I just want some tools, tips and techniques to put this back together. And by the end of the session, he actually kind of fired me. He said, okay, so, you know, it was lovely meeting you. And sometimes we have to see if we're a fit. And I don't really think I'm the person for you. So I'm still in this zone of trying to control things and just fix things and not acknowledge at all that this is going on. And I'm like, are you for real? I come out here and I'm at my most vulnerable. And now you tell me you can't help me. You're rejecting me. Sure, I was nowhere near vulnerable. I was completely disassociated. I had the theory and none of the feeling. Well, I can tell you, when I went back to that man a week or two later, and I walked in the door and I was like, I'm sorry now, but you're going to think I'm somebody different, but I've had an awful week and all I'm doing all week is crying and I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'll always remember he looked at me and he said, now see that girl? I can help her.
Yay. Do you know? Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, and that was kind of, I suppose, the start of me allowing that wound to come out. And allowing myself to be, when I use the term broken, that's how I felt at the time. Now I look back and that whole period was such a breakthrough. Like, I am so glad that I went through it. And I'm so glad that it took me 6 months. And I'm like, there is not one part of that process that I regret. Like, if I could change anything about it, it would only be that I would have been able to say out loud, I have some mental health issues right now and I'm having trouble coping, or I'm having trouble just doing anything. That would be the only thing I'd change, because I'm sure there would have probably been a load of people that would have understood that. Whereas I was out of work with a backache. And, you know, because of that, then I isolated myself because I didn't want to be going around trying to fake some physical ailment that I didn't have. So that journey or that 6 months led me to this. But the funny thing is, even after 6 months, my doctor did not want me going back to my job. And I had also seen a clinical psychiatrist. She didn't want, it's not that she didn't want me going back. She wanted me to go back in a 3-day week. I just wanted to go back and be normal. I wanted to go back, put all this behind me, and just, I'd learned some ways of kind of processing stuff. And I was going to go back, and this was just going to be a closed door in my life. Well, it didn't happen like that, because when I went back, I knew in my heart and soul, it was definitely not the place for me. And what I did was I started doing courses at night. So I decided I wasn't brave enough to leave. And I decided that I'd start doing something that I loved, so that at least the pleasure of that might make the boring days more bearable. And off I went and did a course in reflexology, because I loved getting reflexology. And I was taking case studies. And I always remember one of my buddies, I trained a massage first so that I could learn about the anatomy and physiology. I had to have that before I could do the reflexology. And I remember massaging my best friend, like, who I'd go to spas with. And she actually said to me, "Oh my God, give up your job. You have healing hands." And like, we were both roaring. Like, she meant that genuinely. Yeah. And I was like, "You must be joking me. I'm not doing this for a living. This is too hard. I want to clock in and clock out. I don't want the pressures of being self-employed." But it was like the universe was drawing me in like a magnet. So I did the massage, I did the reflexology, and then the energy healing. I would think the energy healing was the game changer for me, because it took away all my fear, all my fear. So I went from doing out these lists, the pros and cons, how much money I'd need, to just arriving in one day in May after training in bioenergy for 3 months and just having the script, my resignation letter written. And I just said, "I'm leaving." Now, I wasn't trained in reflexology at the time. I wasn't trained in bio. I was in the process of learning. I just knew. I was done with being afraid, and I was done with worrying about the future. Every single fiber in my cell said, "You've got to do this. You have just got to do it." And it was like for my mental wellness, my physical wellness. And the day I walked out of that and left was just the happiest time of my life. And so many people came up and they were saying, "You're so brave. I'd love to do that." And it made me realize how miserable so many other people were, trapped by the money side of it. So my breakdown, I often say, or my burnout, was like 6 months plus 2 years. And it was the evolvement in those 2 years then where I really became comfortable with being vulnerable. Because once I started doing the courses, I still didn't know what I was going to do, but I kind of knew it was all right to say, "I'm not happy here." Whereas I wouldn't have said that before, because I would have felt that that made me weak, that I should have been able to cope, that I should be able to do it. And I found myself almost comparing people in the office. You know, I'd look at other people and I'd say, "But like, he or she are doing the same job as me. And like, they're not stressed out of their head like I am. Like, why can't I do this?" And like, I had got counseling when I went back for the, you know, the start of the 2 years. And I was meditating before I went to work. And I just got to stay and I thought, like, it's just not a fit. And once I kind of saw it like a relationship, and I stopped having to feel like I had to, you know, villainize work or victimize me, I just kind of thought, we're not a fit. That's why everybody else is happy here. They're a fit. I was a fit for 25 years. Well, maybe 23, the last two I should have abandoned ship. So it was the comfort, I suppose it was the ability to be able to say, it's okay to just step away from this. I can tell you though, when I did it, I think my parents thought I was having a second breakdown. You know, people didn't really get, some people got the bravery, but other people didn't get that you'd walk away, that you didn't know how you were going to pay your mortgage, and you didn't know where the money was going to come from, but you just knew you'd be okay.
And we're so conditioned, aren't we, in the world we live in. You have a good job, you've been there 23 years.
Yeah.
Stay there. And it can, like, that be terrifying for other people, because
yeah,
suppose you're mirroring to them that they could do that too.
Yeah.
You know, and it can often be safer for other people to be like, "Oh, we all just do the same thing. We all just stay in places, even if we're not here. If the conditions are good, if we're, you know, paid well, we've a pension, do you know, it is hard.
Oh, completely. And like what I had been trying to do was I was almost trying to in my head wait for the perfect moment, because I used to do these sums up and I'd say, well, if I was really frugal now and I just saved everything for the next 2 years, that'd give me such a nest egg. And I'm like, when I left, I had none of that. I had none of it. I just thought, I'm out of here. And if I knew I'd have my stamps for 9 months, and I thought, I have that little backup. It's enough to pay the basic things. And if I can't make a go of this business, or if I feel it's not for me, I can get another job. There will always be jobs. There will always be ways of making money. And I just have this liberation that, like, I'm just going to be happy. My job is to be happy. And if I'm happy and doing something that lights my soul up, everything else will work out. And everything else has worked out. Do I have the kind of money that I had back then? No. Do I live like most people now, where I might juggle a bill here or kind of know what the absolute kind of end line is to pay the credit card? Yeah, so what? I get to walk in the woods every morning. I get to meet amazing people. I don't have to go to the doctor 3 or 4 times a year now for a chest infection that clearly had to have been brought on by stress. Because in the first 3 years after I left, she didn't see me at all. I think she thought I'd move practice. Yeah, because I remember when I went down, she said to me, "Do you know," she said, "it's nearly 3 years since you were here?" And I said, "I sure do." And I said, "And that makes me think stress was making me sick, even though I didn't know I was." I mean, I knew I was stressed when I'd burn out, but I'm talking like 5 years coming up to that, recurrent chest infections, recurrent sore throats. So it's amazing.
And you do see that a lot. And as you're talking, I'm thinking of a few people I know. I'm like, they need to listen to this, because it's a massive, massive thing that people stay in jobs when they know they're done. And especially when you start doing any kind of inner work on yourself, because I'm big into energy and, like, you know, even your vibration. So as you were changing, you were energetically, your body was shifting, your energy, your vibration. So you possibly weren't even a vibrational match for that job anymore.
Completely, completely. It just, and it's so interesting you say that, Kira, because what I found even was, people would be asking me questions, and they'd be entitled to ask me the questions because I had the answers. But even stuff like that began to irritate me. I found it so just irrelevant. And then, in any business and industry, especially in multinationals, it's all about the bottom line. And even things that I was being asked to sign off on or do that didn't resonate with me, that I believed to be, and I'm not going to say they were doing anything illegal. They absolutely were not. But there was things where, like, profit margins with customers that we had a long time that were already healthy, and I was just being asked to do stuff that I had a problem with, and I didn't do it. I mean, I had got to the stage where I was kind of thinking, you can discipline me if you want, but I'm not doing this because I'm not comfortable with it. So you're right, there's almost that lead up that you only often see in hindsight. And the other thing that I would say to people that are listening to this, if they're wondering, because sometimes people will say, yeah, but it was fine for you. You knew what you wanted to do. No, I actually didn't. So when I started the life coaching, when I completed my diploma in 2011, I thought that would give me the clarity on what I wanted to do. Again, that mind I have, looking for processes, looking for procedure, just get it all down to the ABC. And then I trained in, well, not trained, but I did a weekend training in Deepak Chopra's primordial meditation. And yeah, and I was, I used to do that regular. And he's a big fan of saying, when you start into the meditations, just silently ask yourself, who am I? Beyond the worker, the mother, the friend, the daughter. And I don't know how many times, like, I'm sitting in my treatment room now recording this, but before it became a treatment room, it was like a chill out meditation room. And I don't know how many times I sat in here with my eyes closed saying, who am I? And I used to be fit like to scream because the answers weren't coming. And I remember saying to somebody, they said, but what do you love doing? If you find what you love doing, you'll never work a day in your life. And you know what I answered with? I said, but sure, I love talking to people, but how would you make a living at that? Well, you know, hey presto, you do it by, and like, you know, the work I do now, I'm talking to people, I'm listening to people, I'm advising people, I'm just holding that space. Like, but when I got pulled to this, I wasn't even joining the dots. So what I would say to people is, you don't need to find a purpose to leave a job you hate. The purpose will come, but it will never come if you're in a hostile, negative environment that's eroding your soul. It just won't happen. And that was what I felt at the time. I wasn't really sure what I needed to, where I was going, but I knew the first step was getting out. For me, the first step was getting out. Now, I'm not telling all your listeners, send in their notice today.
And
but what I am saying, sorry,
go on there.
What I would say is go forward fearlessly.
Yeah.
Because there will always be jobs and there will be always ways of earning money. And even if you feel it was the wrong decision, just hang a right and keep moving forward.
And we've so many options. Do you know, like, I remember like that I was in a job and I loved my job at the time, so it was a little bit harder, but I knew I needed to give more time to this and writing and everything. And I remember someone asking me, I was like, oh, will I leave my job again? It was secure. I had a lot of security, financial security, and I did really like it as well. So it was a little bit harder. And, but I didn't have enough time to give to all of this. And it was, they asked me, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I was like, well, the worst thing happened, it doesn't go well. They're like, well, what's the worst thing that could happen then? And they kept asking me, and I was like, well, I could go back and get another job. And they're like, what's the worst thing that can happen? And when you tease it out, you're like, oh my God, actually, you know, there's loads of options, but we think there's only one. We think if you leave this, you do this. And when you said, who am I? I think that's a good question that everyone should ask themselves. Who am I? Because when we dip into that, we're tapping in that we're something bigger than just our job.
Absolutely, way, way bigger. And this is the thing, it's like shedding those roles, because like I was the successful worker in industry. That was the identity that I had got used to wearing. And, you know, I wore it with such pride that it became like, almost like I became encased in cement by it. So what started out as something that served me really well became completely out of balance. And because of that, because I took such great pride in my job, which is a good characteristic, I was unable to say no. And then I fed in to all this validation. Oh my God, you're super at this. Look, we're going to give you this because we know it'll get done right. And like I absorbed that because I liked to feel needed. I liked to be competent. I liked that praise. And I didn't have awareness of any of that. So I, you know, I kind of broke myself by my inability to recognize it. So what I loved then about that who am I question, when you start shedding those roles. So when I went back after the 6 months, I actually didn't care who was happy with my performance. Now, that was a big shock for them. They felt that I had changed, and I had. I no longer was doing the job of two people. I was now doing a kind of the job of one and a half people. And while that felt worse to them, I was still exceeding. But even if I went down to one person or I went down to less than I could do, I didn't care because I had at least let go of that one. But then in, we say, the family, I'd be the go-to person, the family, or the go-to person for friends. And I suppose that was the biggest learning, being able to say no to people who you really love. It's a bit like you stepping away from a job that you really like or love. And I remember always the first time that I said no to, you know, a family member, and it was actually my brother. He rang looking for it. Now, he wanted me to actually ring his partner at the time because she was going through a hard time. And without even missing a beat, I got no kind of butterflies in my stomach. I got no tightness in my chest. I was able to say with pure and utter ease, I can't cope with that right now. And like the minute I said it, he just said, "Oh my God, I'm sorry, that's no bother. I didn't realize you were going through a hard time." And I said, "Well," and like I was like that. I said, "Well, I'm not actually really going through a hard time." But I said, "That's more than I can take on right now." And he said, "That's fine, all right, yeah, no bother." No, he did what most men do. He got really awkward then, you know, and he just kind of hung up. Well, said good luck and hung up. And I remember sitting afterwards and thinking, that was so easy to say. And it was received so well. Whereas before, you know, I'd be thinking, well, I can't let people down, they depend on me. No, they don't. I'm their first port of call. And if that doesn't work, they'll go somewhere else or they'll solve it themselves. So I let go of that role that I had adopted of being the problem solver for everybody. And I embraced the what I call the broken parts of me or the reassembled parts. And like what I love the most, Kira, is seeing people like that come here for my treatments because I can spot it so easy. The people that don't have the language yet to say it or mightn't even have the awareness, and even just holding that space where I might be able to even say something like, you know, well, I've experienced something similar, and I have an idea of how you feel, and I can just let you know it's actually much nicer at the other side, so just keep going. And it's just that reassurance, whereas, like, and I also admire people that come to me while they're in that stage because I couldn't. Imagine I was so judgmental of myself that I didn't even allow myself that kindness when I was unwell. That actually makes me just feel a little emotional now. Imagine saying that, and it's like 12 years down the road, but imagine I wasn't that kind to myself back then. I would have been that kind to everybody else. Yeah, wow.
And let all them tears flow.
Yeah, that's just.
So many people that
Yeah.
hear this, and even that in itself, the empathy of that somebody listening who's like, oh my God, I feel like that. And they might be in that job right now, and they may listen to this and be like, oh my God, look at what Shirley has done. Because again,
Yeah.
it was a lot of choices you made as well. And sometimes we think that things just happen, whereas actually, you know, we take action and we make choices. And a lot of
Yes.
choices got you to here. And I think that's really, really important. And asking for help, do you know, and
Yeah.
being vulnerable and like, you're absolutely amazing. Do you know, I loved when the tears flow because sometimes, you know, we forget how far we've actually.
Yeah. And it's funny how something like that can just even catch you when you don't
Yeah.
expect it. Because, like, I can talk about that now, not detached, but I can talk about it with pride and courage. Now I embrace it. You know, I might meet someone, they might be saying something, and I'd say, oh, I know what that's like. Like I was completely broken. I was burnt out, and I can say it with that kindness towards myself because I didn't have it for myself back then. Now, I wasn't mean to myself, but I was so upset and ashamed that it had happened me. Me. How could it happen me, the coper, the doer?
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm like, yeah, you know what? That can happen anybody.
Yeah.
And it has made me a better person. That's definitely. Do you know what it has done? It has softened me. And you're probably thinking, oh my God, you must have been like, if this is soft, you must have been really tough. But like, you know, I had this exterior up because I was just too busy getting on with life. Whereas, you know, that softness now has allowed me to be what I'm doing. And I feel that that's the real me. And I didn't feel I was faking it for 25 years. Probably for a lot of those years, that was the real me as I evolved. But like, I much prefer this version of myself.
Wow.
You know, like I don't get to fly all over the world. Like in my job, I traveled quite a bit. So I got to see a lot of the States on work's dime. I've been to Hong Kong, China, Europe, stayed in the best hotels, like ate in amazing restaurants. And all that was lovely. Don't get me wrong. That was lovely. I wouldn't trade 1 ounce of it for my walk in the woods in the morning. Not 1 ounce. You know, and I have never regretted it. So what I would say to people is, and it's so valid what you said, Kira, I didn't get her because I'm lucky, or I didn't get her because it all worked out. I got her because I took action and I made choices and I kept making choices. And was it a perfect route? Absolutely not. Am I still turning corners and, you know, looking to different horizons? Of course. But I'm doing it with like a real, as I've said, a real kind of just flourishing heart. Because as I'm sitting here now recording this with you, like I'm in my bare feet. Like I rarely wear shoes during the day. And even the joy of that, you know, that when people, sometimes when new people come, I just say, are you okay with bare feet? You know, because some people actually hate feet. So I'll put on a pair of socks. That only has happened once. But like even that, you know, that I get to sit on my bare feet and work on my bare feet if I want. And nobody cares how I look, you know, once I'm clean. That I don't have to be doing any of the pretense.
And I suppose it's fascinating what you said about even your body and, you know, all them illnesses, you know, chest infections, all that. And when you started to listen to yourself, to trust yourself, and you know, to start doing the things that you needed to do, and say, no, your body actually played ball with you. And I'm trained as a Heal Your Life teacher under Louise Hay, and I love all this. I love seeing that when we're doing things that are not in alignment, or things that I suppose are bringing stress, our body will show us straight away. It will be the first thing to show us this isn't working. And what happens, and I'm sure this is what you may resonate with, you can be treating okay physically with, you know, medicine or whatever, and you're going to the doctor and it's just coming back and coming back and coming back. And it's only when you're willing to go a little bit deeper, you know, and even walking away and saying no, and obviously that's really hard. Things can change, the body can heal things drastically. Do you know?
That's really valid because I remember, you know, this could have been about maybe 15, 20 years ago, saying to her, why am I always getting chest infections? Like I don't smoke, I eat really well. And I, you know, why is this happening? And she's a lovely doctor. And she said, we're not developed enough yet in, you know, immune technology and understanding that. And she said, obviously your immune system is compromised. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, so I took it at face value. And I never really gave it much thought. But when I say like I could be on antibiotics 3 or 4 times a year, that's not an exaggeration. And I used to take inhalers in the winter. And then it just stopped. Now I'd say she got as much of a surprise kind of as I did. They just went away. I just stopped being sick and getting sick. And like even, you know, like I'll be 57 this year. I'm not saying that I'm the, you know, model of health, but I have no ailments. Like I have no ailments. And I see a lot of people younger than me coming in and they're on medication, you know, for different things where the body is kind of trying to raise alarms. And I just kind of think, wow, like, am I just lucky or am I privileged because I'm in alignment with what works with me and thereby my body is able to do what it needs to do. And I hope this holds tough, but like even, you know, that dreaded menopause, I've none of the symptoms. I don't have them. Like I don't, I got a few hot flushes this year. I don't have any of the other stuff. I sleep great. I don't have any of that sweating. And I'm like, now again, maybe it's just luck. Maybe it's just luck. But I can tell you, I'd have it if I was going to work, if not else, to get some time off.
But that is so interesting, like even you sharing that, because I think sometimes we're so clever in our mind that if we think we're going to have something, and the world we live in, we're very, I suppose, programmed. And it's like when you go to college, you get a job, you stay there for a long time, you get a house, you get a mortgage, you know, then you're going to get the menopause at this. And, you know, a lot of that is something we've just learned, you know, that we're like, that's what you do. You know, even when you said about going traveling to different, you know, your job sound really glamorized that people would have probably from the outside in been like, oh my God, she's so lucky she gets to go here, not seeing that within there could be a very stressed out person or someone who's under, you know, who's very anxious or has depression or whatever. But we like to see everything through the eye. We're all nearly the same when we're actually not at all.
No. And that's the one thing that I've really learned is that, you cannot judge anything from appearances or from the outside or what boxes are ticked. It means nothing. It means nothing. Because at the end of the day, how many times would we talk about somebody's job when they've died or you're at their funeral? Nobody talks about that stuff. We say things like they were kind, they had a great laugh. They better say I had a great laugh at mine anyway.
I think you would. She was a good talker.
Oh, Jesus. She let the ears withered off from now wherever she is in the next, dimension. But isn't it though? So like that's our legacy. Our legacy is how we make other people feel. And we can only make other people feel good if that's radiating from us. So like if we're happy, it's like a sunbeam. You know what I mean? It's just everybody gets a touch of that joy. So yeah, the whole appearance thing, the ticking the box, no, none of that matters to me. None of it.
And 2 days at the weekend isn't enough. You know, the way sometimes it can be like, okay, you finish Friday, you've got Friday evening, Saturday and Sunday, go live your best life. Your work is it's the place you spend the most time.
Absolutely. Like, Kira, what I'd have to do every January, if I couldn't go into that office in January knowing when I was taking my summer holidays and having a destination booked, I wasn't able to function. I had to have that carrot hanging out there. So like that in itself says enough, and this thing, as you said, conditioning by society, what is wrong with us that we kill ourselves for 50 years of the week to have two precious weeks off? It's just so crazy. Or that we work harder or try and climb the ladder to get the better car or the bigger house so we can drive in misery or sit in several different rooms in misery. And like nothing against people that want to do that. Like go do it. If that's their best life, go do it. But I'm talking to the people that have been doing that and are now sitting there saying, is this all? Is this it? What is this for? Like, I don't have the answers. You don't have the answers. They have the answers, but they have to create that space so they can hear it. And you're right, you won't hear it on a Saturday and a Sunday. You'll hear it in the depths of poverty in the woods.
But that's it, and providing the space to hear it. We're terrified to slow down the world we live in. You know, and like you, I suppose it was when you slowed down, and you know, things are going to get worse. You know, if someone is listening and they're like, oh my God, I think I need to leave my job. But imagine you've been doing that for 20 years. When you do, if you do decide to leave that, you decide to pause it, the minute you slow down, it's going to be really, really, really hard. But for you, and even hearing your story, keep going, trust the process. It'll be so worth it.
So worth it. And the thing is, like, there really is no such thing as a failure. There's no failure. Everything is just feedback. It's just feedback, And I think if people can see it like that, yeah, is it daunting? Is it scary? Absolutely. But what's scarier? Dying after having like an unfulfilled life? No way. I mean, definitely. And I hope I live to a good old ripe age. But I can tell you one thing. I've got this far and zero regrets. Zero. Like, I don't even regret staying 25 years in that corporate world because I stayed until I had enough to make me brave enough to go. Like, zero regrets.
Oh, surely this is going to help so many people. I suppose, where can people find Where can people find out more information about you? And how could you help someone who's maybe listening to this and like, oh my God, I need some help.
Okay, so the first place I can be found anyway, I have a website, so it's www.shirleykeegan.ie, and then on Facebook and Instagram, Shirley Keegan Wellness. So pretty easy. I think if you just Google me, you know, Shirley Keegan, everything should kind of come up. So how I can help, I suppose the great news is I do distance and I do in person. So all of the stuff is listed kind of really on the website. So I am a qualified life coach, and then I do the energy healing, the reflexology, and the Indian head massage. So I always just say to people, if you don't know what one is most suitable, just book a slot and we'll kind of find out through that. Because one of the key questions that I always ask people at the start of a session is, what's your desired outcome? You know, so if people don't know what they need, at least if they know what they want, we can reverse engineer it. So if somebody wants to be relaxed, that guides me. If somebody wants to be unburdened, now sometimes when people answer that, I do make the joke, sorry, I don't have two tickets to Lourdes. You know, because sometimes people want a miracle and I can't give that in one session. But yeah, so that's where they can find me. And I can help, if I can't help somebody with what their need is, I can most definitely direct them, you know. So I'm not a counselor. So sometimes people, that might be what they need, you know. But yeah, they can go on my website or any of my social media and have a look, and they can get a feel for me, because that's the kind of person I am. I don't know if you'd be like that. If I'm going somewhere, I like to get that feel for somebody. Like even when we crossed paths now, in that course with Jen, like I instantly, and I had seen you because I've seen you like with Sinead and that. Yeah. But I really connected. I don't know, your energy, it's magnetic.
Oh, sure. I love all this. And I love what you said there about, you know, like doing this work, bioenergy, and like, we don't have any magic tool to just fix anything in you. We hold space for you to drop in and find that. And I think that's really important as well, that, you know, you've everything you need, but sometimes you just need a little bit of guidance. And I think there can be so much empathy with someone sharing their journey. And I know with the other people I've brought on, even listening to this, can someone may get like something may click and they're like, oh my God. And I have got feedback on that from the other podcast. So I think you're going to help.
I hope so. And can I just say one last thing, Ciara, for anybody listening to this, right, that feels they have not got the courage, the strength, the bravery, or the wherewithal right now to leave where they're at, then my advice to them would be, do something in the evenings, find a hobby, do something that lights your soul, because that will in some way balance you know, the misery or the stress of it. So even make that one step, and it could be like a community thing. It doesn't have to be learning a course, but go somewhere that the minute you step into that room or that environment or with those people, your heart feels lighter and your soul feels joy. And just do that. Stay in the job if you have to or feel you can't do anything different, but find those nuggets of joy. That would be my just want to say that to people that are thinking, ah, she's off her head, we can't leave.
Okay, no, that's amazing. And I'm thinking now of one more question. What about someone who is in a job like very similar to yours, and they're staying 2 hours later, 3 hours later, they've got very caught up that nobody can do their role, that, you know, like that validation that they have to stay, and maybe the environment they're in, that's the culture that everyone stays. Would you have any advice for someone? How do they even maybe start to make little changes if they're even thinking, well, maybe, you know, I should leave half an hour earlier or something?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, that's a case of needing to work on boundaries and that getting that courage to be able to say no and prioritize themselves. But I suppose the first thing I'd say to them, if they were dead, if they had died tonight in their bed, that job would get done.
Yeah.
So they're not as indispensable as they may think. But if it's a culture thing, it's harder to flip that. So what I'd often say to people when they come here is just picture like a weighing scales, you know, like an old weighing scales for the Libra star sign.
Yeah.
And just think, this is easier for people, especially if they have children or they have family or other people dependent on them.
Yeah.
They're able to get this a bit easier. So I just say, you know, so you have to look at that scales and you have to look at the job on one side and you have to look at your children or your family or the people you love on the other side. Who is more important? And sometimes when you get people who can't prioritize themselves, they're always able to prioritize other people that they love. And I just say, just remember, every time you focus on work and you give them more, they're falling further and further down on the other side of the scales. And is that okay for you? And like, sometimes, you know, that visual is powerful and they're like, oh my God, I never thought of it like that. And I might say, well, your family deserve you to be at home on time. So that, you know, so for anyone listening that struggles to prioritize themselves, that might help. Focus on others you care about, because then you can say to your boss, my child has training.
Yeah.
You know, I'm needed at home, and it might just help people. So kind of, you know, to have an excuse if they can't make themselves their priority. And otherwise I can help with that in life coaching.
Amazing.
But I don't want to say that as a plug, but there are definitely techniques that you can do with that to help somebody, you know, remember their worth.
Yeah, and so powerful. I was like, got all tingly when you said that, because it really is such a powerful visualization.
Isn't it?
Yeah, really, really.
Yeah.
So thank you so, so much, Shirley.
Oh.
I just think this has been amazing, and I know lots of people need to hear this. So thank
you. Oh, Kira, and thank you. I'm just so honored and I'm so glad our paths crossed. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so, so much.